Make more meals for less with Dunn Stores, where you'll save on the aisle with ingredients for a light and tasty chicken salad. That's oyster cut Irish chicken thighs, just $2.99 per pack. Tossed in a salad with 89-cent butterhead lettuce and vibrant vegetables like packs of cherry tomatoes and nets of red onions, just 99 cent. Plus, you can save again at the till with a 5 off 25 grocery voucher. Dunn Stores, always better value. Terms and conditions apply. Vouching abused in next grocery shop of €25 or more.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's sports breakfast show.
I haven't seen this segment before. You like to finish with a bang, is it?
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy. Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
Welcome along. It is The Hurling Pod in the unusual spot this week of a Wednesday, because James Skell was in no condition to record earlier this week. More about that anon, because as Paul Murphy said at around 10:30 last night, when the news was breaking about Davy Fitzgerald leaving Waterford with a year left on his deal, the hurling gods have smiled on us by giving us a story in the middle of the week, on the one week we decide to record late. Plenty to talk about on the pod this week, down to the final four in the All-Ireland Hurling Championship. You've got Limerick chasing five in a row into a semi-final for a seventh successive year. It's remarkable consistency. They face a Cork team who already beat them in the Munster Championship this year and are chasing a first final since 2021. When they lost against Limerick. Hopefully, it's more like the semi-final in 2018 than the final in 21. Saturday's match then, we've got this rivalry that's built in recent years. Clare have beaten Kilkenny twice this year, but Kilkenny have turned them over in the All-Ireland semi-final in both of the last 2 years. So Clare be trying to avenge that defeat against the Cats, particularly the narrow one from last season. Patrick Horgan, TJ Reid, they're both going to make history at the weekend. They will both go beyond 700 championship points and become the first men to do so. Tipperary, in dramatic fashion, winning their 22nd minor All-Ireland hurling title at the weekend, having to do so with 13 men for the vast majority of the match, battling back to win against Kilkenny in a thriller after extra time at Nolan Park by 2:17 to 3:12. But there is only one place to start, and that is Davy Fitzgerald leaving Waterford after two seasons. First of all, Paul Murphy, how are you?
Good. How are you, Will? How are you, James?
The hurling gods really were kind to us, Murph, weren't they?
Well, it's the one time, just through no fault of our own, we were delayed to Wednesday, and I don't think anybody was expecting this story. That's the thing. It's not like, you know, sometimes we come on and you kind of are saying, well, you know, geez, if we held off until Wednesday or Tuesday, I'm expecting news about draws or about, you know, whatever it may be. But I don't think anybody was really expecting this, to be honest. So yeah, to land in before an All-Ireland semi-final with the news, geez, it was huge this week.
Yeah, this reminds me of Cody just before the All-Ireland football final, just kind of going off stage left the day beforehand. Going, it's probably the perfect time to put this news out. I don't know, Skell, is your reaction before I bring you Davy's statement and so on from overnight, did this surprise you last night? Because I genuinely did a bit of a double take when I saw Murph's text into the group initially to say, Davy's gone.
Yeah, I won't lie, I was in bed. So I got up nervous at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I woke wondering why have I a million WhatsApp messages, everyone throwing it at me, as you can well imagine. Timing probably is probably the biggest question I had. You know, I because when you listen to his interviews over the course of even last year and the season just gone, like, he sounded kind of you know, bullish in terms that he would use phrases like stick with us, you know, stay with us, like we're building. So to me, it sounded like that he was in. Trying to stay in water for longer than his tenure. So I just, maybe there's something more behind the scenes that we're not privy to. Something maybe potentially went on between board and management, or players, board and management, that might come out in the wash in the weeks to come. But yeah, I think timing is questionable, but I can't say I didn't see it coming. Just the timing.
Well, like, Murphy did mention multiple times that this was a longer term goal. It maybe would take a bit longer than people expected. And then Waterford had a pretty good Munster Championship, all things considered. They weren't far away from getting through. Obviously, the disappointment then of losing in the last game against Limerick and not qualifying. But again, he seemed pretty bullish after that match about their prospects and where Waterford would go from here. That's probably what caught me the most. If he had gone off, say, the disappointment of the Championship performances in year one, I wouldn't have been as surprised as him leaving now, given everything that he said this year.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. It was the whole demeanour of the thing. Like, if he had this season, despite, you know, not being too far away from qualifying, if he had this season in his third year, you'd still be saying that he's going. But the fact that it's in his second year and that he was so adamant about, you know, that they were building, that was always the talk. And the fact he just had one more year, you were expecting, oh, sure, look, he'll go at it again. So, yeah, it's interesting to see where the decision came from that actually, you know, I had a contract of 2 with the option for 3, but I'm just going to take the 2 and hit the road. That's the thing, you know. So, look, if they were hitting really big heights in terms of their form and what they were doing, you'd say it'd be a bigger shock. But at the moment, though, you could obviously see reason as to why he might move on. I mean, inside their own county and even outside, they were very critical, or Waterford were criticised quite a lot this year, you know. So could you see next year being drastically different from this year? It's hard to say you could. And the other side then as well is that you have a group of players there that still have, you know, a nice bit of hurling to do, but, you know, do they have another 2-3 years? Hard to know. And they're a core group of players that could bring that team back to where they should be while other players come through. So I think maybe Waterford and maybe Davey are looking at it and say, okay, maybe the timing is right now to allow this team to maybe get back to where they should be. And maybe, look, maybe just the matchup wasn't right. I mean, there's a few things there, and that's okay. If the teams don't match up with the manager, that happens, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Did the championship this year put a slightly different slant on it as well, Skell? Because we were among those who were very critical of their performances during the league. They're into the new 1B for next season. We didn't think things were going to come together and maybe get the type of performances that we saw this year in the Munster Championship. Now, call light of day, people turn around and say 2 wins in 8 in the championship in his second spell at Waterford is not good enough overall. But I had a very different perspective on Waterford at the end of the championship than I would have had, say, at the start of it. Did you feel any different about his tenure, given what happened in, it's hard to call it summer, I guess the end of the spring in the Munster Championship?
Not particularly, to be honest. I think that, again, we're assessing his role and how he's influenced the team over the whole course of his tenure, so his whole 2 years. And it feels to me that he started off last year on the front foot straight away, trying to nearly belittle the previous management and the competitions they had, you know, to nearly justify his own existence, which I didn't agree with at the time. And then this year, it seemed that there was an intervention between players and management to try and change the way they were approaching things, or even approaching it from a systematic perspective, game plan, etc. And that's what then produced the performance in the Cork game. So I have plenty of questions. And again, I mentioned a few minutes ago about it'll come out in the wash. I think there's other areas to look at here, in the sense that what other managerial positions are available now? Because that's something you have to look at with him. Because I know for a fact that he actively approaches counties. You know what I mean? So, like, it's not that counties approach him. If he sees an opportunity available, people in either, not him now, but in his team, will approach a county trying to, I suppose, assess the viability of him becoming their next manager, which I have to say, hands up now, with my own county, I am slightly concerned. Do you know what I mean? Straight up, I'm concerned.
Thinking, 90% of the tweets that we received overnight, Skell, were, I wonder will Skell go in his backroom team when he goes to Galway?
I'd rather eat cowshite. I'm sorry now. I can't stress that enough. No, don't let him near the place. Straight up now. And I know this will go public, and I don't care.
Well, you are on a podcast, so go on.
Yeah, either I sit by and let it happen, or I say something. So, no, don't let it happen. Don't let it happen. End of story. How did I get on here? I'm sorry. Murph, how are you?
No. Hold on. Before we go back to Murph here, why would you not want him in Galway? And this would all presuppose that Shefflin would leave and that Henry would be interested in going in for another interview with Galway. So why don't you want him?
Yeah, like I know the Henry situation, and I'm saying this tongue-in-cheek, you know. It's not sorted yet, or it's not been finalised. And there's no rush in it either at the moment, if you ask me. But I just think when he comes along, David, this is now, it's a circus. It's a complete circus. I can't stand his demeanour on the sideline, or the way he acts. I just can't stand that whatsoever. He seems to try to create a siege mentality with just players normally, but even, you know, it negates the influence of people in his own country, supporters, etc. So I don't want that whatsoever. I would like to think that we're gone past that kind of circus situation. Like, we had that go back years ago with certain managers. So no, it's just no more. I have questions over his tactical know-how. You know, even his man management of players, it just screams to me like there's when you go through the pros and cons, there's far more way into one side and it's not on the positive side.
Okay. Well, look, you can speak personally about his man management. Murph, his own timing of this, I kind of thought when he came in that this was going to be a reasonably short-term project with Waterford. I really felt that this was a case of they felt they had underperformed under Cal after winning the league a couple of seasons ago. So therefore, it was a case of let's take this group, let's mould them into, you know, a winning championship team, and let's try and bring it to the next level. But yet, throughout his whole term, and it wasn't just this year, as Scales already mentioned, the first year he went, I've got to kind of change the attitude of these players. Second year it was, this is a longer term plan than even I thought it was when I came in. That's probably a mark against him, isn't it? That this wasn't exactly a team he was taking over in a development stage. This was a team that had massive potential and should have had the potential at the top end of the championship, but didn't show it in his tenure.
Yeah, like we've seen counties when Davies joined them, that they get a kind of a bounce. Like particularly, I suppose, Wexford being the example that when he goes in there, their form kind of picks up. I think emotionally, he picks the team up. And even if they weren't performing well on the field from a hurling point of view, they seem to get this kind of emotional reaction and they start performing, they start working really hard and using Wexford as that example. But there was a different feeling when he went into Waterford. And straight away, I mean, something we spoke about last year was straight away it was talking down the players, which was something to look, Stephen Scales said straight away that we didn't really like seeing that, because I knew if I was part of a panel of players and the manager was openly talking us down before we've even pucked the ball, I'd be really, you know, disheartened by the whole thing. And it was almost seemed that it was playing down the chances before hopefully you get a few results, and it almost looks like that you're after suddenly now getting a reaction out of the team. Like these Waterford players, there's a lot of like top class players in that team. There's no reason to play down the team. Now maybe it was deflection tactics, who knows, but either way there were so many things to point to that you could, it wasn't like other tenures that he had with other teams. He started trying, I suppose, really radical tactics that just looked to stifle the whole Waterford team. And like, you know, you had a core group of players there that were playing in Club All-Irelands and winning Club All-Irelands with Ballygunner. Like these lads know how to hurl. And you had more players then as well on the panel that had hurled in All-Ireland finals as well. Or, you know, there was a wide variety of players. You have Austin Gleeson then stepping away, maybe just, you know, maybe not enjoying his hurling, whatever it was. So there's lots of things.
By the way, Murph, intriguing timing by Ozzie Gleeson to, I know it was because he was doing a media event on Monday, but he announced he's going back in the panel next year, and within less than 24 hours, Davy Fitzgerald is gone. Did Ozzie Gleeson know, I wonder?
There's no smoke without fire, Liz.
It's very close timing. You know, it is very close timing. There's no point in saying otherwise. I mean, it probably won't ever come out if it was or it wasn't, like, granted. But, you know, look, there maybe was an element there. And look, I can see the formations that Davy had been playing over the last year or 2 years. For me, that wasn't conducive to having an Austin Gleeson in your team. Not that Davy didn't want him, but just that Austin Gleeson is a very kind of plays the game as he sees it, in terms of you put him in midfield, centre back, centre forward, whatever. Like, he likes to read the game and express himself and go and play the game. Whereas, you know, if you're to take the example of the goalkeeping situation where there was literally a fella behind the goal and there was Davy telling him where to puck the ball, like controlling to that extent, I don't think it was ever going to suit an Austin Gleeson anyway, because like I've hurled against him and you don't know what he's going to do next, because he's literally playing the game as it plays out in front of him. So if you were trying to restrict him with tactics and with a set structure, and a structure that was really bananas at times, I can understand why maybe an Austin Gleeson wasn't there. So look, there's lots of things with this tenure in Waterford where it's like, looking at him stepping away now, I'm going, yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing, because they didn't come back any further. They weren't a million miles away this year, but nevertheless, you know, like what they did in the league compared to what they did in the championship, there was marginal differences, but it's not like they used the league to actually build any game plan for the championship. They nearly threw everything out the window when it came to championship and actually started to hurl quite well. So there's lots of stuff there where you just go, look, the 2 years for me didn't work out. And maybe, you know, these players will get new lease of life under new management, whoever that's going to be. And that's where they'll actually get the bounce now next year.
So those championship wins in Munster, Tip in 2023 and Cork this year at the start of the group stage. Just his own words on this, he said, quote, in the statement that was released last night, after careful consideration, I've decided to step down as manager of the Waterford senior hurling team. I would like to sincerely thank the players for their efforts over the last 2 years. Just the tiniest of margins prevented us from making Munster's top three this year and progressing to the All-Ireland Championship. It's my firm belief that the talent is there for Waterford to compete strongly in hurling's highest level again. I'd like to express a massive thanks to Peter Queeley, Owen Kelly and all my backroom team, as well as the County Chairman Sean Michael O'Regan, Secretary Pat Flynn and the PRO Richard Tobin for their unstinting support during the last 2 years. Finally, I'd like to wish Waterford every success in the future. And the Waterford Chairman Sean Michael O'Regan said then as well in the statement the Waterford put out after I think the reports first broke in the Irish Examiner about Davy, we sincerely thank Davy for his hard work and dedication over the last 2 years. His impact has been significant and we wish him all the best in his future endeavours. So, the line I would pick up on there, Skell, is it's my firm belief that the talent is there within this Waterford group. And yeah. You felt, with pretty much all of the comments that he was making about this being a long-term job and so on, was that he was the long-term man to take them forward. So why would he leave Waterford now?
That's a great question, Will, because if you take the words of his statement literally, he is saying that what he has at the current phase of what the Waterford team is sufficient to go and compete and win. So it's very strange that he would leave that position. I personally don't think... I think everything sounds too, pre-rehearsed, structured, positive. Both statements, they're aligned, very well aligned. There's something more deeper than that. And Murph said it there. It might never come out in the wash in the weeks to come. We might never hear about it. But it just seems to me that there was something, a third party involved there. And I have to look at the players and think, did something come together? I'm only surmising now. I'm not saying I've heard anything, but I'm only throwing a bit of guesswork that it may have happened whereby players said, right, we've enough of this.
Because your feeling, Scale, during the championship was that it was the players who, and I remember us talking about this and me saying, well, look, is it not a strength of the manager if you do listen to your players, that it was the players who wanted to change the tactical approach when they came into the championship? Because you can't deny that there wasn't a fair old change in the way that they were setting up in the league from the way they set up in Munster.
Yeah, and I think people, the public in general, might not give enough respect to players to understand that they're actually, we're talking about adult men here, like, we're talking about people who are in professional positions and jobs, you know, going for professional positions in college, etc. And so they're intelligent people and they can see what's in front of them. And I think if you go out through the course of the league, you cannot tell me that there wasn't a group of players, or even all the players, that said to themselves after the league, this is not going to work, less. We're going to be clipped if this doesn't change. So my sources tell me that there was a bit of a meeting down there, and I use the word intervention probably a bit strong, but there was a drastic course, change in course, let's say, after that, at that meeting. So the time between their league exit and the time between the play at Cork, something happened in the middle whereby there was a discussion or a meeting to say, change this now or there's going to be major problems. And I think what happened was the players, let's say, spoke and the management listened. And what you got then was the result of the Cork game. So in fairness, I think that the players are due a lot of credit, to be honest, for having the willingness and forcefulness to go and change their own situation. So I think that's exactly what happened down in Waterford. So when that happens, maybe, you know, players will look at it in the season. And the players do have it from time to time where they have like an interview review together, a chat. Not in a social setting, but in a fixed structure setting whereby they assess their, you know, their own situation and see where things went wrong, let's say. And maybe one of the topics was the management team. So that's a very, very strong possibility in my view. And like we've seen it before, it's had form before. So will it ever come out? I don't know. And like, as you said, Murph, about Ozzy coming back, he's, for me, I know the term generational talent gets thrown out a lot, but he's a generational talent, to be fair. You know, and he's a player that's far too good not to be in the Waterford team. So, and maybe again, the players looked at that and said, we need to get Ozzy back. So maybe that was part of it all. I think there's far more elements of this than two very, very nicely aligned statements.
Okay. Yeah. As to where he goes next, Murph, it all depends on whether vacancies become available over the next while. Oh, but on the face of it, Derek Ling's going nowhere. John Kiley's going nowhere. I would imagine Cork sick with their management for next season. The potential ones there would have to be Dublin if Micheál was to leave. Potentially Galway if Shefflin was to leave. I think Keith Roster stays in Wexford, so I don't think a second spell there is realistic. So
Westmeath.
Clare is the only other one potentially. If Lohan was to go, but I'm just saying this is a possibility. If, say, I don't know, Clare were to lose on Saturday and Brian Lohan decides I can't take them any further than here, would Davy Fitzgerald go and try and get back to his own county?
Murph, before you answer, right, I want you to give a percentage chance for each county in your own humble opinion, right?
Okay. So I'm giving Galway, Clare, Wexford, Dublin. Is that
No, leave Wexford. Roster's definitely going to
start. Yeah, I was going to say Wexford. That's 0.01%.
I reckon, so the options here are Dublin first. Yeah.
Dublin. Dublin is the highest one for me. If there is, let's say if things were to move around and we hypothetically move on, lads, I think Micheál Donoghue to Galway and Davy to Dublin is far more likely than Davy to Galway. Like, I'd agree with Skettle there. I don't think Galway will go, well, Davy's what we need at the moment. And that's the other thing. Like, an inter-county team that is in serious contention or would feel they're going to be in serious contention, it's not just a case of getting any manager with credentials back in. It's a case of what do we need and what suits us and what will our batch players react better to in terms of their skill, in terms of, you know, the mindset of the players, etc. I think Dublin could go, right, well, we'll look for that bounce that Wexford got a few years ago. That might be something we want. But I don't see Clare or Galway, like, let's say if those situations were to arise. And again, like, I mean, like, none of those jobs are vacant. So we're just saying hypothetically, I don't see them going for it. Like, again, it's an even shorter time since Davy was with Clare than when he was with Waterford last, let's say, comparative to when he took over the jobs. And I think Clare would be a little bit more deliberate about who they would pick. If, again, like, I mean, we're just saying, like, you know, Loughan may stay on, but if Loughan was to move on, a replacement for him would be, you know, very considered, I think. I don't think they just go knee-jerk reaction, former player who may have, you know, interest in the job or whatever. I think they'd be looking at saying, look, we're so close here. We need to just get it over the line. And
if Davy was in the room now, Murph, he would say All-Ireland winning manager with Clare.
And if he wants to go down and get Paul Kinnock as well, like, you know, and get the whole management back together, fair play. But, like, you know, if you, like, it's like saying you get an All-Ireland winning manager from the 2000s and bring him back in thinking, well, you're going to win again. It doesn't necessarily work like that. Absolutely, it's part of your credentials, but it doesn't necessarily mean you fit the bill this day and age for management. Like, there's a lot of managers who have come through and over the last few years who are more adaptable and suitable to the modern game at the same time, you know, and are also able to bring those people with them in the backroom team that can really benefit a setup. So it's not a case of, yeah, absolutely. I mean, your credentials are your credentials, but it doesn't necessarily mean that just translates automatically back into a county that you won previously with. I think far more likely the percentage is that if Micheál Donoghue's move on from Dublin, that might be the one. Now, he might stay away and he might go for a maybe a higher profile club job or something like that, or maybe he'll, you know, stay away for inter-county for a year or something like that. It's hard to know, but I think if you were to say, right, he's going back in tomorrow, where would he go back in? I would say, well, if Dublin came available, that may be the one he'd go back into.
I'm going to say Westmeath is 0.01%. I would say it's almost impossible for that to happen. So for you then, if we were going to rank that, Dublin most likely, probably, is Galway a runner at all for you, Murph, before I ask El the same question?
No, I don't think it is. And I know, like, I mean, when you're inside in Galway and you're looking out, you might think, is there a possibility here? I don't believe so. Like, I mean, Galway, you know, I don't think Galway would be saying, look, that fits the bill for what we require from our players at the moment. And look, I agree with Skettle, like, you know, in terms of, if you're bringing Davy on, you're bringing a little bit of an element of the TV kind of profile, and, you know, you're going to be in the media. You're throwing players into the media quite a bit. You're bringing a little bit of not controversy, but, you know, there's going to be stories following you. Like, you know, do you want that with the team? Galway have a batch of herders there. They have players coming through. They'll go, well, what we actually need is we need a coherent structure. We need X, Y, and Z. For me, that's not what Davy brings in terms of fitting the bill. You know, you're going to have, you know, a mindset coach on the sideline. Do Galway need that? I don't think so, to be honest. So there's lots of things here that I'm just going, no, this doesn't do it. Whereas maybe Dublin will go, well, this is where actually we can roll the dice on this. Why not? Let's see what happens. Whereas Galway are actually going, you know, they'll either stay with Henry, or if they move on from Henry, they'll go, well, what we actually need is X. Does Davy fit the bill? No. So for me, it just doesn't match up.
Scott, you're really ruling out this Galway idea. You're saying you don't want Donoghue Cullen coming in as your mindset coach? He's got a bit more time now that he's not doing breakfast on 2FM.
Oh, God Almighty. Is that where we're at? Is that where we're really talking about? Like,
just kind of poke answers and interesting comments from you.
Yeah, no, I have to rewind back, let's say. And look, okay, buckle up here for a second. I'm going to rant for a minute, Ox. To go back and see, right? And I have great respect for Henry for doing what he did, travelling up from Kilkenny to take on that job amidst of all the, I wouldn't call it controversy, but the difficulty in taking that job. No, I know locally it must have been very difficult for him, right? So I want to give the man the respect. If he chooses to stay with Galway, fair enough. If he chooses to go, absolutely fair enough. But I know for a fact, and I have to rewind back here, that when Shane O'Neill was in the same position as Henry, Shane O'Neill, the previous manager of Galway, was in the same position with Henry, that there were representatives from Fitzgerald's camp were actively trying to recruit the current members of Shane O'Neill's management team to see would they stay on when Shane gets sacked. Do you know what I mean? That's an awful act, if you ask me.
Hold on. How late into O'Neill's tenure was that happening? Was it when
this was after... So Waterford beat them. You remember Waterford beat them in Thurles? They beat them Cannings' last game in fairness. Yeah. So about maybe a few weeks after that, I'm going to say a month, give or take, there was still... The landscape was still quite quiet. You know, there wasn't too much coming out because in the middle of the championship, it was early we got knocked out. But representatives of the Fitzgerald camp approached members of that current Shane O'Neill management team, wondering and probably just poking to see would they stay on if Fitzy got the job with Fitzy. Do you know what I mean? Which is, that to me now is an awful act. That's an awful act. I wouldn't agree with that now whatsoever. You know what I mean? And needless to say, I know what that person, where he told him to go. Do you know what I mean? But and the thing is, like, Murph asked, what do we need? I have to go back and say, when I spoke after got knocked out this year, I said we need someone, and I said promoted from within, internally, who has to assess the Galway landscape at an underage level, 20s onwards, and have the great reset I mentioned. So, and if I'm trying to put someone in that position, you know, providing that Henry, let's say, goes, if he goes, it's not Fitzy. It's not even Fitz. You know, it's someone within. It's someone with local internal knowledge. And that's why I agree with Murph that the Dublin position is probably the most likely for him to go, because he's in management now for what? Got 14, 15 years at least, more even, you know, 16, 17 at this stage. I think there's only 1 year that he dropped out of a senior intercounty male team and ended up with the senior intercounty female team in Cork.
In Cork, yeah.
So this seems to be like this is part of his profession. You know what I mean? Sorry, expenses of profession. So I don't see him not having a position of sort. And I agree with you, Martin. It could be a very high profile club team, but the chance of that, I give that a 25% chance versus a county.
Yeah.
You know the carousel.
Intercounty is where he wants to be, really, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. And what he'd say, I think he secretly loves the spotlight and whatnot. I think it honestly ties all into his overall career, if you know what I'm saying. Mm. More, like, there's no publicity. No such thing as, what's the phrase? No such thing as bad publicity. Bad publicity. Yeah.
If this happens, Gail, will this be like Joe Brawley and Mickey Hart, where it almost hurts you for him to be in charge of your county?
It does, yeah. It was, yeah. And I think there's a few layers to get through before we get there, and that's where I'd be disappointed with. You know, the nomination, if he occupied the position, this is all theoretical, you know, I'd be disappointed. But for him to get through the layers, you know, to get that position, that'd be worse in my mind. I'd be saying, really, as I said, is that where we're at? We're taking steps backwards. And I do believe, as I said, there's people from within that if Henry does go, that they have sufficient credentials as well and experience to take up a position. And if you assess their intercountry career in terms of winning percentage, it'd be far higher than the man from Clare, you know. Okay. So
is that Micheál, or who do you mean there?
Well, you have Micheál, do you know what I mean? And you have Matty Kinney, if you ask me. John Matty Kinney is a good guy within, who was a Galway for years in terms of senior management also. Great campaigns with Coola, brought him from nowhere, etc. And, you know, Dublin is a question of position anyways. I don't think if you put Brian Cody in his pomp, I think he'd find it difficult in Dublin, you know, at times with the competition. So I go back from within. I say that, and I'm shouting the message loud here. If Henry does go from within.
Okay. Before we move off this, Gail, you can play the same game as Murph played. Again, I'm going to say here that basically Westmead, Kerry, teams who are involved in Joe McDonough who are below the top table, even if, say, Willie Maher was to leave in Laois, any of those type of options, I don't think he's going there.
Don't discount that now.
Go on. Do you really think he would manage in the Joe McDonough?
Right. Who was the manager of Westmead when Noel Larkin was involved with them when they won the last? It wasn't Joe Fortune, was it? Who's before Joe Fortune?
It was...
Access the mainframe here. I can't remember.
Shane O'Neill from Dublin, wasn't it? So Shane O'Brien from Dublin, sorry.
Shane O'Brien from Dublin, you're right.
You put O'Neill in my mind because of Galway. Shane O'Brien.
Yeah, my apologies, yeah. But again, I know, again, when something like that happened, when that management team, Shane O'Brien was leaving, something very similar happened. There was contact made to establish the, you know, the chance of... I think it was nearly a presentation. This is what it'll cost. You know, okay. Do you want it or not? And I bet you, if you ask your colleagues in the Offaly County Board, did the same happen before Johnny Kelly got nominated? I bet you they'd say yes.
Okay, I don't see him rocking up there because again,
you didn't say yes or no.
No, but I don't. But I certainly there were plenty of rumours before before Michael Fenley left that there was maybe interest on Davy's part, but it never really came to anything.
The only other team now that, like we haven't mentioned, if and the manager has done a good job there and may stay on, but it's a big commitment is Antrim. Like, you know, Darren Gleeson has been up there for a long time. That's the only thing I'd be saying. Like, he's done a great job with them. He's tipped away. You know, they've got results. They've got big results. But, like, you know, if that job was to come up as well, you know, we've seen a lot of people travel distance up to Antrim to manage them. So, you know, there's another team as well that may come in from left of field. Like, now, I suppose we're having this conversation from a point of view. If every county lost their manager tomorrow morning, that's where
we're not. By the way, we're not trying to sack anyone here. That's why exactly.
The rumour mill is in full flow in Galway this week, because I only had it there from, someone had it for me on Monday. And, like, this is a good source, I have to say. Like, he's usually very reliably informed, was that there's going to be a Chip Super team coming up here in O'Shea, Gleeson and Sheedy. And I said, stop this. Jesus, is that
getting the band back together.
Like, if Galway got that thing, Tip would love that background. Like,
Tip would love that management team, yeah.
Galway, I guess.
How would you feel, I can't believe we've ended up going into this tangent here. How would you feel about the Tipperary Avengers coming together there?
I don't know how it feels, to be honest. You know, I know
you love Tips, so go on.
You'd be torn a little bit, Skell, because you'd be looking at, in fairness, the boys have great credentials. You'd be going, but then
that's the trouble. They're super credentials. Like, you know what I mean? That's the fucking issue. Like, you know, how would you even argue against them? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I like them, treat them both. And Eamon O'Shea obviously resides in Galway, with one of his sons on the panel. And it's like, oh, jeez, this could be potential. This could be, it's a viable option. Do you know what I mean? But, like, I can't say bad words. Like, they're all, Eamon O'Shea, I suppose, behind, and I mean this respectfully, probably is second in terms of Portugal and in terms of innovation with the game over the last, 10, 15 years, you know, in terms of coaching. Liam Sheedy's record speaks for itself. I don't have to comment there at all. You know, and Derek Leeson has done wonders in Antrim, which is fair. You're right, Murphy. He's done great things in Antrim. So if they came together, I think the Tipperary probably could be very jealous if we got them.
Who'd be the manager? Would it be O'Shea?
I don't know. I asked this question as well. Who would piece them together? You'd have to say it would be O'Shea. That would piece it together, you know? But then they'd be occupying positions that you would think wouldn't be suited to them from past experience. You know, Sheedy's always been the manager, kind of the managing director, if you like. Mm. And O'Shea has always been the coach on the ground. So I don't know. Again, that's rumour mill. I give that genuinely. Oh, God, I'd be amazed. I give that a 5% chance. You know, I'd be absolutely astounded. I'd be gobsmacked. Murphy, if that happens, right, and the podcast immediately after that news breaks, right, you're doing 95% of the talking. I'm with
So is Davy Fitz higher or lower than 5% chance for Galway then?
I have to, when you consider where he was 2 years ago, you know, in the
process,
the percentage chance in the whole process, is he higher or lower than the Tipperary lads? Oh God,
it's around the same, to be honest. Because
I'd say probably, yeah, maybe I can't
see
higher.
I just can't see. I think there's a willingness from the public to back someone within. I think so. 0%. No, fuck that. 0%.
And Dublin then is for you. Is it the most likely location? Whether it be this year or next year?
It's a good question because look, again, you know, it's the whole carousel of the inter-county management team, right? But if Michal amazingly, right, said no, I'm not coming back to Galway, and he decided to stay in Dublin, you know, I give that a stronger chance than Davy occupying Dublin.
Okay.
Because this feels like. Do you remember when Liam Cahill said on? Do you remember when Colin Bonner left Tipperary?
Yeah.
And we said, right, now it's time for Liam Cahill to come across Tipperary, and he stayed for an extra year. You know, that I'm never ruling that out again. And I think Michal, you know, like, I think Dublin actually been closer to Cork than people would actually believe, you know. So I think he probably sees potential in that squad. There's potential for him to stay there, absolutely, but I hope not.
Okay.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit Hyland.com.
So, all right, let's just park the Davy chat there. It's an interesting
33 minutes earlier, later.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I always knew it was going to be half an hour, but here we go. Of course, this is the Hurling Pod. It's brought to you by Borgos Energy. They're the proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship. I think we should probably look to dig into the two games this weekend at this point. We will talk about the minors a bit as well, but this is going to be an intriguing one. We can start with Clare and Kilkenny, Murph, because, excuse me, Kilkenny have ruled the roost for the last couple of years, but Clare will point to the fact they won the league final, they won the regular meeting earlier this year, And Clare's need to now get over this semi-final is massive this time around to get back into an All-Ireland final. Give me broad strokes. How do you see Saturday afternoon going?
Well, it is more of a dangerous match. I'm very surprised, actually, when people are chatting to me, particularly from outside Kilkenny, they're just saying, I suppose you're not too worried about Clare at the weekend. Kilkenny people have huge respect for Clare and the matches they've had, particularly last year, I suppose, right off the year previous to that. But broad strokes, I don't believe that the two matches at all play into the psyche of the Kilkenny team this year. They'll absolutely look at it and take from it where they were hurt by Clare and what Clare can bring to it. But they'll also look at it. Like, I remember even the game in Ennis, Kilkenny full forward line did make one ball stick, I'd say, nearly in the first half. You know, in the closing minutes, Kilkenny had several opportunities to put the ball over the bar, but started going for goals very early on. Got a penalty. I think that was the same day the penalty was stopped. Owen Cody. There was plenty of things there that Kilkenny could have actually eked out a victory. It mightn't have been pretty, but they could have done it. You know, there seems to be a full bill of health as well in Kilkenny. But I think Clare, I actually do believe that Clare could possibly be in the best position they've been over the last 2 years coming into this game, all bar the fact that Tony Kelly had more hurling over the last 2 years compared to this match. But like, I see it merely at the moment playing out very similar to last year. Really tight game. Lots of, you know, big plays in the game that if Clare got a goal or Kilkenny got a goal, it could really decide it. But the game staying tight right up to the end and Kilkenny just doing enough. Like, I even see Kilkenny's bench there that, like, I've really liked how Derek has used the bench, even starting team and then going, okay, well, when will I introduce players into this game, depending on what way the game opens up? He's done that really well, and particularly last year against Clare, he introduced Keane Kenny at a really important time. Keane Kenny popped up, I think maybe got a point or two, but also set up other points. So I think Derek knows how to use his hand there. Now, also at the same time, and you see the likes of Aaron Shanahan coming back to Clare, like that's a huge thing as well. Will he start ahead of Aidan McCarthy? It's a tough call. I think Aidan McCarthy will start, but I think you'll see Shanahan at the first sign of a forward wilting, you'll see Aaron Shanahan into the game. But look, if I'd call it now, I'd say the same as last year in terms of really close, really tight game. But Kilkenny doing enough to get over the line.
Okay. Skell, Clare's record in Championship Kilkenny is not good. Haven't won since the semi-final back in 1997. It's one win, one draw across the nine so far. Kilkenny have won all the other games. So Kilkenny have got a very, very impressive record against them. Is that going to change on Saturday afternoon?
I think Murphy made a good point there about it. Probably Clare's best position of the three games is the current one. I think over the last 2 years, they've, because on the back of the Munster finals, you have to remember there's a header Limerick, they produced two very, very, I suppose, excellent performances. And I think people thought they'd kick on getting to Crow Park because it suits them. High energetic team, you know, very athletic, etc. And Kilkenny just did the Kilkenny of old and they just ground them out. And I think from this year, you're saying maybe there's an element of weakness in Clare, but like this, I give this year the best chance of them beating Kilkenny over the 3 years. Yeah, for reasons, because so many factors, right? So, A, it's their current position, right? Even the public. And they have the underdog position occupied now at the minute. I think Kilkenny are probably slight favourites. If I was to check the spread, I'd say it's probably a point or two in Kilkenny's favour. But in saying that, right, I think there's probably, how do you say, a difficult matchup for Clare. Because Kilkenny, let's say, when you match them up piece for piece, you know what I mean? Kilkenny match up very well against Clare. I think what you'd see, Murph, is actually Shanahan start. I think what they'll try to do is they'll try ground out Kilkenny and play them at their own game. You know what I mean? High intensity work rate, high intensity tackling, etc. And then bring on some guys like McCarthy when the game opens up to a degree. I think when Shanahan comes on, it kind of turns into a bit of a long ball game. Do you know what I mean? At the end of it, which maybe mightn't be the best thing for tired bodies. So if you bring on someone like McCarthy or Shane Meehan, people who can pop into these, you know, in the spaces that might suit, you know, for snipping a point or a goal at the end. But I do think an awful lot depends, again, and I go back to it, and I sound like a broken record here, is how is the Clare halfback line deal with Kilkenny half forward line? How are they going to deal with the likes of Adrian Mullin dropping way out? You know what I mean? Do you know, John Donnelly dropping way out. John Donnelly not occupying his centre position. He'll show up in any of the five positions between 8 and 12. You know, I think there's going to be tactical questions asked of Clare. I don't think Kilkenny get the respect at times, and probably from myself as well, in previous years where I said they were probably a more traditional-based team, who had to come on board with more of the ball possession, you know, ball retention type pattern. But Derek Ling, in fairness to him, has put it great. His own stamp, you can see his stamp of a team. You know,
the last time we saw them, Scale, they were anything but traditional in the Leinster final. It was a lot of short passing, a lot of movement around
the forwards. Point being, where they have now is that they've really, they've developed, and they still have the old traits, don't get me wrong, they still have the high intensity worker like I mentioned, right? But now they've got a good tactical formation, if you like, where they can switch it up a bit between different people, which is, you know, it's very positive for Clooney because it's going to ask serious questions of Clare. And we've seen if Clare can play in their 6v6 in the back, right, in standard positions, they'll be fine. But when they can't, when you start moving them around, you know, questions get asked, it becomes very difficult. And I don't think anybody really, bar the acceptance of Limerick, has solved the Adrian Mullen issue. Do you know what I mean? Where he comes out. And I think that's going to be the big one, how to deal with that. Ultimately, I think Clare are going to have to pull back a third midfielder or a fourth half forward to try to deal with that, which means they're making tactical changes to suit Kilkenny attack. So all in all, if you were to ask me to call the game, I personally think it's going to be a better game than Cork and Limerick. I think people are pumping up Cork and Limerick because of what happened to Páirc Uíomh and the excitement, you know what I mean, and the finish. Great, fine. But I personally think that Limerick are going to win that by a margin, whereas Kilkenny and Clare, I think, is going to be very, very hotly contested. So, I'm still going to say Kilkenny by, honestly, by one.
Okay. It's more 2023 meeting than 2022 meeting between these teams, so in your eyes. Murph, where does Tony Kelly play in this one?
Where does Tony Kelly play? It'll be whether it's he's named to play full forward or let's say corner forward and drifts out, and you will see the whole Mikey Butler thing, or what's the story. He's going to be out around the middle anyway. I think that's where they see him. They're going to give him open ground there to try and get out, get on ball. And I think what Clare see is that, well, they have the likes of Shane O'Donnell, let's say maybe Aidan McCarthy, but particularly likes of Ian Galvin and a few of them who can play a two-man full forward line, keep them in there while they have other people out around the middle of the field going tackling for ball. Now, with that said, I do see the likes of Shane O'Donnell coming out towards centre forward and then maybe cycling someone else in there, even the likes of Peter Duggan for a small bit to cause, you know, a bit of a physical presence around there, and maybe a few balls will break. So Tony Kelly, for me, he's going to be out around the middle somewhere. He's going to be drifting across in front of the half-forward line, trying to pick up balls around the midfield. Like, again, this is, what, third game back, is it? He's still coming to the pitch of his own game. And I think the best way you can get Tony Kelly into that game is letting him off around the middle. And I would say similarly, like with Adrian Mullen, like, you know, there's some players in the game that you kind of give them the free license, and that's how they best get themselves into the game, whereby if you told them they have to, say, play a certain position and the other team has tabs on them quite well, well, if they have to play that certain position, they're quite restricted in what they can do. If you restrict the likes of Tony Kelly or Adrian Mullen, you're scuppering yourself, really, and you're not benefiting from having their full talents on the field. So I think they'll try and draw him out. Now, we've seen previously that hasn't worked, but that's not to say it doesn't work now at the weekend. So I think that's where you're going to see him. Whatever number he has in his back, I don't think it's really going to matter. I think what you're going to see is if he starts swinging forward, if he starts corner forward, I don't think they'll start in midfield. I think the midfield they have there, the two boys know their jobs and they know what they're to do. But I think you'll nevertheless see Tony Kelly out and around there anyway.
Okay. The next one on that scale is, does Mikey Butler go out with Tony Kelly, or does he stay, as been suggested this week, to watch Shane O'Donnell?
It's a good question, because you'd say in the height of form, you'd say that Shane O'Donnell would want more watching than Tony Kelly. But I think you have to stifle both, truthfully speaking. I know Tony Kelly was coming from a different position last year and the year previous, but as we said previously, Shane O'Donnell had two very good games against Kilkenny in 23 and 22 and was influential in both, albeit that Tony Kelly wasn't. I think you go the same. You put Mikey Butler and Tony Kelly. I think Shane O'Donnell is kind of a different animal, because when you look at Tony Kelly, both exceptional players, but you look at Tony and say, right, he's athlete first. He's exceptional. He's quick, nimble on his feet, very elusive. So he wants someone who's going to, match those traits. And Mikey Butler suits him to a degree. And I think as well, when we think of Mikey Butler, we think of him as a cornerback, obviously, but he has potential to go forward. And we mentioned in the past that man can score. So, like, he's willing and able, and he's able to survive in the middle third of the where Tony Kelly occupies most of his time. So I think, look, history is a habit of repeating itself. Mikey Butler did well on Tony, so put him on Tony Kelly. And with regard to Shane O'Donnell, again, this is a kind of a different one. I don't know if maybe you might disagree with me here. Mikey Butler did a man-marking job on Tony Kelly. Would you put Paddy Deegan on a man-marking job on Shane O'Donnell? Would he be the best suited? Fit, strong, you know, relentless is the word I'd use.
Yeah,
no. Would you not want Deegan to get as much space as possible for himself, though?
That's the question. When we have the ball or they have the ball. But the thing is, right, is who does more damage? You mean, does Paddy Deegan do more damage for Kinney or Shane Donnelly do more damage for Clare? And for me, it's the latter. Sorry, no disrespect to Paddy Deegan, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. No, I think, to be honest, I think Hugh Lawler will stay with Shane O'Donnell as long as he's in the full forward line. I think Kilkenny have gotten to a stage where they go, well, Hugh Lawler is, I think there's just a full belief in Hugh Lawler that whoever goes in them, he has the speed, even if it's, let's say, not a taller player, but a player with great speed, he is able for him. We've seen that even with Conor Whelan's strength, the two boys get like are matched up really well. And if a player has great height, like Seamus Flanagan, he's still able to deal with that. So I think whoever plays at full forward, Hugh Lawler and Markham, and I think at the start that would be Shane O'Donnell, but Shane O'Donnell may drift out. If he drifts out, Kilkenny may have a plan for that, but I think Paddy Deegan will stay in midfield, and I think that's where I see him starting. But Kilkenny will be told across the half back line that I think the likes of David Blanchfield might actually, funny enough, maybe go in on him, because he's great athleticism, and we've seen Kilkenny kind of indicate that David Blanchfield is the man to step in on a big player on the opposite team. But just something to say about Tony Kelly and Shane O'Donnell, like, we've had the situation years ago where you're going on man-marking jobs. They're two different types of lads to man-mark, because if you're to typecast them, now both of them have everything in their game in that they can go and win their own 50-50 ball, etc., and they can play it whatever way. But generally, Shane O'Donnell will start at full forward and he'll break diagonally out left and right, and you're to land ball into that position, he'll get it and he'll take you on. He can win every other ball within that, but generally that's the ideal scenario where people like to hit Shane O'Donnell. With Tony Kelly, I considered like a type of a Lar Corbett type situation, where when we were going Mark and Lar, it was a case of Lar can win his own ball, Tony Kelly can win his own ball, but predominantly it's a case of a loop and run whereby Davy Fitzgerald wins the ball and suddenly Tony Kelly's gone, and you're looking at Davy Fitzgerald with the ball and Tony Kelly's gone now, and he pops it off, and now suddenly Tony's in 50 yards of space and you're chasing after him. And it's that thing of not getting distracted by the ball. The reason Mikey Butler has matched up with him so well is that Mikey just looks at Tony Kelly and goes, where's he going, and runs around after him. And in that, if Kilkenny pick up a ball, Mikey will break away and go make himself available. Only if he's guaranteed that he knows that he can get the ball, he won't run into a congested situation. So I don't think you go, okay, well, Mikey Butler, of course, I think he'd do a great job if he was to win against Shane O'Donnell. Doesn't mean he'd win everything, because Shane O'Donnell is Shane O'Donnell, but he's more matched up to Tony Kelly and what Tony Kelly can do and cover ground. So that's why I just think there's a difference there, and why both Shane O'Donnell and Tony Kelly will be deployed differently in that respect as well.
Murph, who do you think Clare put in Adrian Mullen then?
I'd say probably Dave McInerney. Like, I'm thinking between the two boys, I'd say McInerney. The reason I think that is, you know, he's played every kind of position. Like, he is a decade of hurling, like, kind of even full back under his belt in full back line, and that kind of sticky marking. Again, it's just that tenacity that, like, Dermot Ryan likes to get forward, great defender, but you know, you kind of want him to get forward as well and play his own game, where Dave Mack can kind of go through a game and just be stuck to his man, win ball. And we saw him the last day on Lee Chin, he caught two great balls over Lee Chin the last day. Like, in terms of man marking, his positional sense is really good, and I think he knows how to at times sacrifice his own game to scupper another player, but then also knows how to play himself back into the game when he has a bit of time. So I think potentially I think Dave Mack is the man. If you see Adrian Mullen cross the half forward line there, I think McInerney will be the man.
Okay. Before we get on to Cork and Limerick, Skell, you're going, what, narrow Kilkenny win here?
I am, yeah. Narrowest margins. I'm going for Kilkenny by a point.
Okay. If Podge Collins was asking you at the moment, Murph, and you're getting ready to go in and do your thing on the BBC, what are you saying to him if you bump into him?
I'm saying Kilkenny by 2 or 3.
Nice, okay. You looking forward to being back in the BBC this weekend, by the way?
Yeah, it was great crack last year, and the crew that they have, like Neil McManus is involved as well. Actually, look, I know Neil good for years. I don't know, Skell or sure will, like, you've been around him. Extreme, Oscar Skell, you have had pints with him this year.
I have.
I drove him around while he was having pints, sir.
Well, one of the most energetic, positive fellas, and he has that sultry Northern Irish accent as well. Like, but the likes of him, like Thomas Niblock, like really interesting fellas to talk to as well. I don't know. I think the likes of, I think Lee might be back with us again this year. I'm not sure exactly. Sarah Mulkerns and them are presenting as well. So there's a good crew, but also BBC have done something that's been really interesting the last years. They've also had a referee. That's there kind of not on co-commentary, but if a decision happens, they go to the referee. I think Fergal Horgan was there last year, and it's an interesting thing to do, because, you know, during the game, decision is made and you have another referee in the cold light of day to give your opinion whether it was right, whether it was wrong, or why the referee made a decision. And I think like what I found really great with the BBC is they've done different things over the last few years that hasn't been done before, and they've bought people pitch side. Like, we're talking about promoting the game. Like, they got like Paul Mescal and Paddy Keelty and the boys and brought them to the game and asked them about the game. Now, I know your hurling supporter wants to know about tactics, doesn't want to know about that, but you know, they were kind of going, well, let's do something different here. Let's get people with big publicity, bring them in, use their platforms and chat about it. And it's a novelty. Like, I mean, think if you're flicking across the channel there and you see Croke Park coming up and you see Darrow Breen and Paul Mescal on the sideline, you're going to ask yourself, like, what are they doing on the sideline there as well? But no, look, I enjoyed working with them. And again, look, get to go to two games at the weekend and have good chats with the likes of whoever, Kieran Carey and Neil McManus and the lads. So yeah, looking forward.
Are you on CoCom this weekend or are you in studio?
No. I'm in the studio. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'll have another leech in for getting his blazer situation now at the weekend, hopefully.
Right, that may well determine what time we do the pod on Sunday based on Murph coming back from Dublin as well. So,
well, it's the first thing I thought of, because I thought that you might want to do a live pod, and next thing you think the match on the Saturday would be at 4 and the one on Sunday would be at 3:30. Match Sunday at 4 now is going to be a Skettle through the toll plaza type situation here now, or live updates as I drive down through Ballymun.
Yeah. Kilkenny's a bit closer. I still have every faith you can probably get back home if we go to 8:30 as opposed to 8:00, but sure, that's all to work out.
Who'd do anything with Nash in the car either? You wouldn't know.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, people were complaining, by the way, when Nash wasn't in the car. When Nash was finished school and we had a couple where he was in the house, people were going, it's not Nash if Nash isn't in the car. So
yeah, or Tommy in San Francisco.
Exactly, and he was, of course, in San Francisco and not in his car on the way to work every single time you see the bridge in the background. Before all that, if you're listening to us now, the tickets will be live for this. Off the Ball's hurling final preview is coming from the Borgosh Energy Theatre. It's on the 19th, which is the Friday of the All-Ireland Final. Unfortunately, the reason we don't have the hurling pod across all this it's because James Skell is at a wedding at the same time, but we are going to link in with him. But tickets are now available on Ticketmaster. I'm going to put the ticketing link out not long after this podcast goes live. So unfortunately, Skell, this is the moment where I kind of go, I'm looking forward to chatting you on the night, but unfortunately I have to do the sell here with Murph. Are you looking forward to going back to the BGE, Murph?
Yeah. I'm going to miss Skettle, I'll be honest. The way it played out, it's going to be disappointing. I know we have an elaborate way of bringing him into to the show, the conversation, but look, busy schedule, people have personal lives as well. It's unfortunate for Skettle, but look, yeah, it's great to be going back. It's going to be interesting to see who we have. Like, look, Dolan's last night, really enjoyed it, and like that's really, I think, what we get out of it is the interaction with the crowd, the guests that we have on, and just like, I suppose seeing the guests in that format where they can kind of just chat away about whatever they want and seeing where the conversation goes, that's what I'm really looking forward to. And then, of course, the crowd jumping in on top of it as well, which is always welcome. Heckling or otherwise is always welcome. So, looking forward to it.
Yeah, okay, we'll have lots more details about the guests, which will kind of slowly drip over the next few days as well. And I feel bad, I'm kind of blocking Skell out of my mental view at the moment. Where I kind of go,
no, I was just thinking, Murph's a heckler. I'll pay a heckler to go up and just give Murph 2 hours solid abuse.
All right. Let's get into the All-Ireland Champions then against Cork on Sunday afternoon. Skell has already indicated a couple of times now, he said, could be a clipping last week. He said earlier this could be a little bit one-sided. Here's what Shane Kingston had to say when he was talking to Ashton O'Reilly this week about Cork's chances against Limerick, especially having beaten them already this season.
And how do you feel overall about Cork at the minute in terms of the championship and the performances you're putting in?
Yeah, I suppose it didn't start off too pretty. We kind of had two losses at the start, and then, you know, probably a lot of people were writing us off, and you know, things kind of turned around then, and you know, we've had four games in a row now winning, so you know, thankfully we're building a bit of momentum, which is, you know, the ideal time of the year to be doing it.
And that turning point was the Limerick game, really, in the Munster Championship to get the win that night. You came off the bench, you were really the difference in the end. What did that game mean to the team as a whole, to give you that momentum to kick on?
I suppose, yeah, it was hugely important. As you said, it could have been the turning point, really. You know, we'd lost the previous two games, so, you know, obviously it was brilliant game to win, and, you know, especially the atmosphere down at home in Páirc Uíomh, and, you know, the Cork crowd, full house, it was a brilliant atmosphere, and, you know, a great game to win.
Yeah, it's a high point in the championship so far this year for Cork, but Murph, when you think about it, four wins but two of them probably less conclusive than they would have hoped for against Offaly and Dublin with the last two matches. Where do you see Cork is at now going into the Sunday?
Well, the funny thing about Cork is that I don't take, like, the Offaly one, we've said it was a damned if you do, damned if you don't. If you go in the hammer room, people say you got nothing from it. And if the game is tight, people will ask, why was it so tight? When we know Offaly have serious quality there as well in their team. And the Dublin one then, yeah, the Dublin one's a strange one. Like, we saw afterwards then as well, I was reading in the papers last week then that, you know, the I think Darragh Fitzgibbons came out and said that there was a bout of sickness went through the camp as well, which, you know, would explain it. I mean, if you had one or two players sick, you'd be saying, right, they shouldn't be playing. But if it kind of a dose went through the camp, yeah, that might explain it as well. But also, I'd probably read more into the fact that generally, as I said previously, I think Cork, sometimes what we see with them is that whatever team they're playing, they set their standards off that team as opposed to setting standards off themselves. And that's more in line with it. But for me then as well, that still doesn't affect how this game is being played. This is a standalone game for me, particularly because it's Cork. You know, I think anything, I agree with Scale here, anything could actually really happen here. Like, this game could go out, be built up too much, and Limerick get two early goals and it just, the game drifts away from there. I don't believe that'll happen. I think the fact that they've already been burned in the 2021 final, that a lot of these players go, whatever it's going to be, it's not going to be anything near that. I do think that'll be closer to the truth. Cork could win this game and they could go out and be bet by 6 points. It's anywhere in between. Trying to pull the bones out of it all completely comes down to what Cork mindset arrives on the day. And the one thing I do take from this is that you learn a lot from what Cork are going to do in the first 5 or 10 minutes. I remember seeing in the game Parky Creeve, they hit Limerick with huge aggression and they're actually in their face. And even when they knocked the Limerick player, they actually, you know, you can see like Declan Dalton, these lads getting into their face. That to me will be an indication that if Cork are doing that, they know that to beat this Limerick team, they're going to need a few teams to go right for them, but they also need, they're going to be absolutely relentless and play with a physicality that we probably haven't seen anybody play against this Limerick team with this sort of physicality. So if we see those indicators in the first 5 or 10 minutes, I'll sit back and I'll go, okay, they're in with a shout here. Does it mean even if they play to those levels, they get to win the game? No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Because the other question I say is, and I know we'll get on to Limerick, is Limerick, anytime we've seen them in Quintecrow Park, they've brought it to a new level. And that's the big thing for me then, is that a performance unlike anything we've seen from Cork still may not be enough to beat this Limerick team.
There's plenty of speculation at the moment, Scale, about Barry Nash's fitness. And certainly the last 3 or 4 days, there's been a suggestion that he's hurt his hamstring. Again, I don't know whether that's true or the extent of it, but certainly the stories are doing the rounds at the moment. If Nash is missing, how big a blow would that be if he was out?
Hold on a second. This was a common theme last year, as we remember.
Oh yeah, yeah. As soon as I hear a rumor, I
went back to our group. I went back to our group chat. I typed in Nash. I went back and said, "Look at this. Second week in July, Nash is out." Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So, Will, I'm not answering this question. Will,
I'm just saying hypothetically. Who wasn't available for the weekend?
Okay, let's talk hypothetical, right? I've gone past the viewpoint of looking at Limerick and saying, right, if they're missing a player, that they're in trouble. I'm past that. I know we talked about squad depth 2 years ago, but by God, has their squad been tested over the last 2 years when they miss big players and players not firing well? Some really big players not firing well. So I don't think there's any player in that Limerick team, truthfully now. And I rephrase. I don't think there's any player, outfield player on the Limerick team that's not replaceable, or that Limerick can't carry themselves forward during their absence. And we've talked about the biggest players. We've talked about Hannon. We've talked about, Keane Lynch missing. We've talked about Glenn Svensson, etc. So Sean Finn, Mike Casey, they've all been tested over the course of their tenure. Kyle Hayes inclusive as well. So I don't think it's an awful loss, to be honest with you. Terrible loss to as a team, because he's such a good player. Yeah. I don't think the Limerick like wheel was stuck roller. You know what I mean? Just because they're so efficient and so good and so well coached. So again, Barry Nash is going to play, right? But if he didn't play, it won't make a blimey difference.
Fair enough.
Answer question.
That's about as conclusive as you can actually answer that. Does Flanagan come straight back into the team, Scale, assuming that he's 100% fit? I believe he has been back training and he's on course. So
I knew this question would come, right? And I've been trying to think of the answer and I still haven't got to it. Because straight up, what Shane O'Brien has done against Clare in the Munster final, right, was extremely impressive. I know people are looking at scoring exploits, and that's probably the main facet of a forward, you say, right? But his ball retention was deadly. I mean, it was super. I think I was going back through the notes, and I had written 8 out of 8 sure contested. So that must have been the contested balls in with himself and Adam Hogan. So his ball retention is class. And you know yourself, Murph, if you're in the forwards, or even at the backs, the keeper, look up the field and the ball is coming out as quick as it's going in. It's disheartening. It's terrible. Mm. So when it goes in and the ball's been able to retain, the next thing you get scoring opportunities off it, it's huge. Now, I know Flanagan had a great game previous, but I'm staying with it. I'm staying with Shane O'Brien. You know, and I know John Kiley, look at Flanagan, who's done it for how many years? 6-7 years at this stage, and has been excellent and one of the top performers, but she's like, Shane O'Brien, he did the Munster final. It's just extremely impressive, and keep rocking. And I know Flanagan had a phrase there. I read it somewhere. I don't know, it was in a recent interview, you know, but he was on about the pressure. And he said, pressure is a privilege. And I think that he was talking about, you know, the overall pressure of the Limerick squad and winning. But now it's individualised now. Do you know what I mean? Because now his position's up for grabs. You know, so now it's a different bracket pressure. So it'll be interesting to see that if he does start, you know, how will he perform? Now there's focus on his position, if you know what I'm saying. So, again, there's a lot of intriguing matchups, a lot of intriguing, you know, I suppose, fast as this game, but I think Shane O'Brien, for what he did, yeah, I'd start with him.
All right. Murph, if you're a defender with Cork this week and you're getting ready, would you prefer, if a team sheet has the Young Bulls still in that position, or would you prefer to be facing Flanagan?
Young Bulls. I think I'd
hold them both in the same regard in terms of who I'd least like to be facing. I'll go against Gettle here. I think they'll start Flanagan. The reason for that is, and I'm actually trying to draw into reading into what I think John Kiley will do. Like, both two exception players start, and I agree with Gettle there. O'Brien, outstanding in the Munster final, and looking forward to seeing more of him. But I'm trying to draw on the fact that Cathal O'Neill had kind of been in this situation several times where we were like, oh, he has to start him this weekend. He was just brilliant in the last match, and we kept going, and he didn't start him. And it's like a rite of passage or a blooding process. Not that John Kiley is deliberately leaving these lads out, but I think if he sits down and he looks at it and goes, okay, Shane O'Brien, yeah, great Munster final. Seamus Flanagan against Cork last time scored 3-3, didn't come away with man the match, and has performed really well in Croke Park, outstanding in Croke Park any time we've played. I think on the big day, I think if Flanagan is fit and healthy, he starts the game, absorbs that pressure, if you're talking about that scale, absorbs that pressure, you know, wears down that Cork full back line, probably pops up with a few scores, and then you see the onslaught of the bench being unloaded, and there's when I think your Shane O'Brien comes in, and your Shane O'Brien steps into a Croke Park in this Limerick team, having the opposition softened up a small bit, and in he goes and performs the way we know he can perform. So for me, I think Flanagan will start, and they'll find that bit of rhythm back into the full forward line again. So I think that's where Flanagan will come in.
Skell, the game that's already taken place at Páirc Uí Chaoimh, there's probably two ways of looking at this. On the one hand, it gives Cork belief that they can do it, and we saw how effective both going a bit longer and at times their running game can be against Limerick. And on the other hand, Cork have kind of shown their hand, and Limerick will be able to analyse what happened, and Limerick tend to learn from the games that go against them, the very odd defeat they take here and there.
Yeah, but if you come at the king, you best kill the king. And Limerick aren't dead. It's that simple. I think probably around the public, and I'm not sure the media have a part to play in this as well, but there was like this feeling that that Cork, you know, really, and he uses, you know what I mean, by they really bet Limerick.
So, I mean, you know, that was comprehensive or somehow.
But they didn't really beat them. Like, you know what I mean, they snatched it, and that's the truth. And they snatched it from after being, was it 7 or 8 points up, and they got clawed back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Got turned over. So it's one thing going, taking a lead against Limerick. It's one, and then sustaining it and then keeping it at the end. So that's what you have to do, is get out in front of them, keep it, and then make sure it's done at the end of the game. That's not very, very simple. And, you know, I look more into the overall game and say, everyone looks at Patrick Hogan, the penalty, very great excitement, and Cork saw it out, came away with 2 points. But the overall game, let's say, Limerick, they did dominate in the second half. And I think a bit of a brain fart in defence allowed the penalty to happen. So I don't think it was anyways comprehensive at all. I thought it was a great spectacle, really open hurling, for great for the neutral and the public, etc. But I just can't see that materialising this Sunday again. I personally can't. I can just see Limerick choking Cork, you know, and asking major questions that haven't been asked of them as of yet. And I stand by it. Like the Limerick in Crow Park is a far different animal to a Limerick in Turles or a Limerick in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. They're just a different animal. They're unbeaten in a long time in Crow Park, and it's like they just, and I hate to use this proverbial phrase, but it's like they turn it up a notch when they get there, and they know how to utilise this whole dimensions and even the stadium, etc. And how, and they're well supported. So there's a lot more for me pointing towards a Limerick victory here than there was down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. So I know there's a bit of a public furore about Cork and the supporters, etc. And trains being booked. That's very romantic. That's all. Sounds lovely. But Limerick don't give a fuck about that. You know what I mean? And like, we've seen what they can do to teams, lads. They'll choke the shit out of them. And the thing is, the Cork's defensive unit, how they'll match up against the Limerick forwards is huge. I think personally, the Limerick backs and the Cork forwards will have a good battle, because Cork now have ball winners, big ball winners. But can the Cork backs, can they get possession and work it out with the pressure that Limerick are going to apply? It's always the question.
Don't worry, the Limerick fans will be joining at Limerick Junction and meeting a lot of the Cork fans on the way up anyway. And it looks like, based on the limited tickets that went on sale yesterday, they went really quickly, the ones that were for the stand. And after about an hour, I logged in just to have a quick look. It was Nally high up in the stands, and Hill 16 was all that was left at that stage. So I think there's going to be a bumper.
What are we in? Are we in 60s or 70s? What do you think?
60 or 70s in the season?
Sorry, 70k attendance-wise.
Oh, sorry. I reckon 70k, yeah.
Yeah. And the last time was, what, 65, 68?
I think so. And I think it was 72 off the top of my head. It was either 71 or 72 in 2018, which was rammed. But I'd say something along those lines, yeah.
Right. Interesting.
Which is going to be incredible. I don't think there's going to be anything like that on Saturday. I think that's going to be probably more like 40 to 50.
Are you doing, Murphy, are you doing both games for BBC?
Yeah. Yeah,
both. Saturday and Sunday. Nice. It's the mortgage for 2 months.
It's
just 3 months, correct me if I'm wrong.
Just before we finish up the main pod, and we will talk about the minor final in a bit more detail in the members pod, because it was pretty epic in the end, Murph. You were there. Kilkenny will be, of course, I would say, cursing the fact that they had an extra two men for so much of the game and would ultimately lose to Tipperary after extra time, 2:17 to 3:12. But when you consider Killy Minogue, Daryl Hora both get sent off in the first half for Tipperary, they have to battle. The rules, of course, are changed now, where you don't get your men back at the end of, in this case, the 60 minutes. Pretty epic stuff the way that Tipperary won that final on Saturday.
Oh yeah, I mean, it was an incredible win for Tip. And like, I know people may or may not have been surprised to see the likes of Eddie Brennan and different lads coming out, but like, call it as you see it, it was just an outstanding performance from the Tip lads. Like, very early on, was it 10 minutes in, like, for the first red card, wasn't a red card. The second one then, I know people were probably more disappointed off the fact that they already had someone sent off at this stage, but the second one was a red card. It was a high tackle, and it was a very wet day. This was the thing. It was a wet day, and look, the Kilkenny player, the position changed, Tipperary player shows him into the head. It was a red, it was disappointing certainly, but I think people a little bit more accepted that one. But from there on, like, just such a defiant performance from Tipperary. I mean, any time Kilkenny got a goal or a point or whatever it was, tipping down the other end and responded. And I think, I suppose, buoyed by the fact that their supporters were really recognising, and as the game was going on, how much of an effort these young lads had to put in. So, look, of course, it's disappointing from a Kilkenny point of view. We thought, you know, maybe in Nolan Park it'd be a great way for young lads to win a minor All-Ireland, but you have to give full credit to Tip and to James Woodlock and his minor team. Like, it was just such a defiant performance. That's the only word I can really think that describes it as well as it could possibly be.
And literally before we finish, Skell, you weren't able to watch that game. You weren't able to pod on Monday. You gave us a nag in Newcastle on Saturday that I believe is still running to try and finish the race.
Oh my God. Like, did we say to you at some stage, Skell, how come you never give us an old horse or anything like that? Because you'd be there going, oh yeah, I this one won. I know.
Trouble is, right?
And so, I wouldn't mind. We got money if the horse came in the first six. I was like, sure, six? Yeah, I was like, yeah, surely this is buying money.
Listen, there was a couple of tips I got on Friday, and I forgot to give them to Sui.
I bet you did.
And they came in, and I was like, oh, I, but you know what? I better give this one to the lads now, because, you know, I was feeling bad.
Yeah.
I was feeling bad that the lads are missing out. And I gave you one, and reliably informed, came straight from the jockey, and I just didn't get him. But anyways, sorry lads, but you went heavy, lads. You went heavy on him.
But should I trust you?
Yeah, I trust you. I was like, this is a good tip.
We have a man who has a winner, who's involved in a winner at Cheltenham, is out in wherever you were, Newcastle at the time. You had fucking Liverpool, sorry, and the horse was running in Newcastle. Yeah. You had the jockey, the man was on the back of the horse and told you that this horse is going to win. And then, like, I don't know what happened. How many horses were in the race? Was there 8, 10?
Oh, there was 400.
No, it was a big field, which is why they were paying.
Oh, was it? Thank God. Thank God. I want to see like a Grand National type field for this because it was like top six. That's a shoo-in.
Yeah, flat race. Oh, it's tough.
Jesus
Christ. Anyways, is that the pod over? Thanks, Les. Sorry
about that. Pretty much is. So the reason you couldn't pod on Monday then, because I thought we were kind of going to arrival pods territory if we start talking about horses. Let's not go too far down that direction. But you obviously had a good weekend, Skell, if you weren't able to pod on Monday.
I was over my soon-to-be brother-in-law stag in Liverpool. So I went Friday evening and then Saturday and Sunday. And then it coincided with me getting sick, a couple of infections in my chest. Now I couldn't talk Monday. No voice. So the podcast would have been extremely difficult, I have to say, doing sign language, which I'm not good at. So thanks, lads, for restructuring the weekly pod.
That's no problem. I just went under the bus with Will there as well, so there's no panic whatsoever.
But he's right, though, in fairness.
Somehow
right.
The BBC. I understand what you're doing, Will. You were giving a little plug there, but...
But I was also trying to tell the listeners, I was like, so here's the reason we don't have a pod today. I was not to know that Paul Murphy had agreed to slip away from training in Danes Fort a little bit early to do the pod, and unfortunately you do all the running in the end, did you?
Will, tell the truth.
Yeah. Oh, no, no. It was our Junior C's were playing, so I'm involved with Junior C's. So then I was like, I told them already that, right, I'll be out, but I'm going to have to slip away at halftime. But then if I had any ideas of slipping away at halftime or anything after we decided that evening that we're not going to record a pod, thankfully Will and his 20,000 followers were then informed that we're not recording the pod this evening, folks. So wherever Paul Murphy's meant to be, he has to stay.
That's unfortunate.
Will, you told me that Murphy's fee goes up the later goes on into the week.
If I Anton past 7 o'clock in the evening once we start recording, Skell, you should see the numbers. It's like one of those casino yokes where the number.
That's the reaction I was hoping for now, to be honest.
The power and off the ball just drips. If you ever see like Joe Malone around and the lights drop, they just have to cut the lights because it's like the fees are so big.
Well, thank you, Skell, for getting sick, and thank you, Davey Fitzgerald, for timing the story perfectly for the pod this week. That has been the Hurling Pod with thanks to Bord Gáis Energy. They're the proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship. The good news as well, if you're an OTB member, by the time this drops, within a few minutes, you're going to have the members pod as well, because we're going to record these back to back. So that's coming up very soon, and we'll talk to you Sunday after the All-Ireland semi-finals. Paul Murphy, thanking you.
Thanks very much, lads.
Cheers, James Gale.
Cheers, see you, boys.
OTB's The Hurling Pod
with Bord Gáis Energy, proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
Nobody knew that healthcare could be so complicated.
Trump was a failure on healthcare.
Hundreds of thousands of Black Americans lost healthcare insurance. That is outrageous.
And if he's president again, he would cancel insurance for millions more of us.
We cannot go back. President Biden and Vice President Harris have lowered healthcare premiums and expanded coverage for Black families. They also capped the price of insulin at $35. Joe Biden is getting the job done for people just like me.
I'm Joe Biden, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Biden for President.